It's vitally important that employers have a handbook and really policies on this, and that those policies are reviewed continually. They don't stagnate, and it definitely helps to have labor and employment counsel to help draft and update the policies. But it's really important that someone at the employer site actually understands and is aware of how these policies work.
That's labor and employment attorney Seema Ali, and this is Healthcare Confidential. I'm your host, Teresa Jacob Ellis, talking with healthcare innovators and experts about the American healthcare system. Seema Ali has more than 20 years' experience helping clients navigate labor and employment issues, and she works with many healthcare clients. After graduating from Cornell University and George Washington University School of Law and working in her field for a decade, she launched the Ali Law Group in 2011. Seema, welcome to the podcast and thanks for joining us.
Thank you so much, Teresa, and I'm excited for this opportunity.
We've been talking for the past almost year since the show started a lot about COVID-19, and it's had such a major effect on everybody in every business and every field of life, professionally, personally. And many healthcare businesses and practices have already reopened, but some are only beginning to get back to the office. I was curious about what safety protocols employers have to be concerned about when they're bringing employees back in.
Well, safety protocols are really applicable to all employers, but I think for healthcare employers in particular, it poses an even greater layer of compliance, I would say, because of the unique position they are in, given the type of work they do. So we hear a lot about remote work and all of that. That's, you know, for a lot of employers and maybe some healthcare providers, they have those opportunities. But I'd say the bulk and the majority of what healthcare employers are doing are actually in person and involve, you know, patient or in-person contact. And that's the critical part you're looking at when you're talking about safety, especially when it comes to COVID and what now they're characterizing as airborne types of diseases. So in terms of compliance with safety type of, you know, protocols, you have to look at both the federal and the state guidelines. So on the federal level, we're looking at OSHA, which is the Occupational Safety and Health Administration, and CDC, the Centers for Disease Control. So OSHA, the whole purpose of OSHA is to provide a, you know, employers are required to provide a basic safe workplace free of hazards. And the OSHA recommends their precautions, and what they recommend are largely focused on contact precautions, basic safety precautions, airborne precautions, eye protection, things that would be like PPE, those type of things need to be set and kept in place. So it's really important for healthcare providers to be up to date and make sure they're in compliance with what OSHA has put out. And those guidelines haven't changed that much, but you should kind of take a look. The other one is the CDC, and they seem to be issuing, you know, guidelines and changes kind of sometimes by the minute, and it's a little bit complex, and I even have a hard time sort of understanding what they say. They just issued something yesterday about how fully vaccinated people can almost resume normal activities, except for situations when they're in doctor's offices. So that's one of the exceptions. So, you know, exactly what that means, it's hard to say. But it is important to keep up to date on what the CDC is doing. And that's another requirement. And then finally, you also have to look, and even the CDC says ultimately they're issuing guidelines, but whatever the state also says is really important for all employers, but, you know, healthcare employers to keep in mind. So what happened on the state level is very recently there was an act called the HERO Act issued by Governor Cuomo that just went into law May 5th of 2021. And basically this act says that employers in New York, all employers in New York are required to implement specific safety standards and adopt a prevention plan to prevent the spread of COVID and other airborne infectious diseases in the workplace. And what that means is they are supposed to adopt a model safety plan and using what the New York State Department of Labor promulgates as a basis for their plan. They issue the law on May 5th. All employers are supposed to have this plan in place by June 4th, but they have not issued a model plan yet. So need to be aware of that, need to be in mind. The importance there is that this law is going to be enforced by the Department of Labor. So if you don't follow through, there's penalties for not complying. But also it gives people potentially a cause of action for saying that the workplace wasn't safe enough. So it's really important to keep all of those things in mind, because these are safety used to sort of be something people didn't think about. But I would say it's probably the most paramount thing right now, and really what could expose people to potential lawsuits in the future. So
yeah,
they have to really adapt and adopt protocols and probably make some adjustments, you know, especially as people come more and more back into the fold of regularly going back to visit their healthcare providers.
Sure. And I noticed in the HERO Act, one of the items on that list is employee health screenings. So I wanted to ask about screenings. Can employers legally screen their workers with temperature checks as they come in the door in the morning? Can they require them to have COVID tests as a screening mechanism? How does that work?
Yes, they definitely can. And I would say that it is probably something they want to have and probably will be required to have as part of their safety plans. Because again, the whole idea behind safety is to prevent the spread. And I think that, you know, obviously vaccinations are important, but one of the critical pieces to preventing the spread is the screening. So it is really important for them to do that and be consistent about it and lay out when they're doing the testing. So it, as long as it's clear and the policy applies evenly or equitably, you know, to all employees and they understand it, if they are going to require testing, they probably will also have to figure out or bear the costs related to the testing if they're mandating it. So that's something to just consider.
And is that only for healthcare employers, or is that all employers in New York?
It's really for all. I mean, the testing or the screening would be for all employers, but I would say that, the whole screening and this whole safety, you have to look at it not just from the federal, but from the state level. And in the state level, what you're required to do, or all businesses have to follow, what's called the New York Forward Safety Plan for their particular industry. So each industry has different levels or different guidelines depending on the type of industry. Now, the healthcare industry is probably at the highest level of what would be required in terms of safety protocols because, again, of the nature of work. Because you're dealing with people, you're in close contact with the type of work you're doing. So they, I think, not only for they're screening the people that are coming in, like the, you know, the patients and all, but the employees as well. So they would be at a higher standard than other employers.
Got it. So you just alluded to the recent CDC statements about mask wearing being unnecessary for fully vaccinated people indoors or out. And we hear a lot about vaccination passports. Are employers allowed to require proof of vaccination or to require vaccination?
Yes, they can. They can definitely require proof of vaccination. And employers can also mandate vaccinations as part of their workplace protocols, but if they do so, they would need to have a clear policy outlining, you know, the basis or the reason for the mandating of the vaccine, but also provide clear exceptions or accommodations for people who have a religious or a medical need that prevents them from getting a vaccine.
Somebody actually mentioned to me that they felt it was a violation, a HIPAA violation, to have to be asked about their vaccine status. Is that true or not?
No. So the EEOC sort of has weighed in, and that the whole question is whether or not the act of getting vaccinated is considered a medical exam, and the EEOC said no. So that's why proof of vaccination can be required, because a vaccination isn't a medical exam and not considered something that would be protected under either the Americans with Disabilities Act or under HIPAA. So there's not a privacy consideration there.
Interesting. Yeah. So that, I guess, applies also to things like entertainment venues that say you must have been vaccinated to come in, or, you know, different other kinds of social networking business.
Yeah. And what New York has done also, and I don't know how this would work for a healthcare setting, but they have developed what's called the New York Excelsior program. And that is a way for businesses or people to participate, and they can like get almost like a vaccine passport, and a way for businesses to maybe not, you know, to use that program to get people who are vaccinated or open. It's harder in a healthcare setting, because as I said, even if you read all the CDC guidance that just came out, it doesn't apply in a healthcare setting because of the type of interactions you have typically in those environments. Mm-hmm. You know, you're too close. And what would be, so I think you have to, it's a different type of risk.
Got it. So another issue that keeps coming up for workers and employers is the rules around leave in response to the pandemic. And the Families First Coronavirus Response Act changed some of those rules. What were some of the changes, and how do they impact on employers and employees?
Yes, the leave rules were and have been and continue to be a major challenge for all employers. And it is, you know, and as healthcare employees, I think it's, you know, you're also, I think, held to a standard of providing care, but at the same time, people, you know, are managing their lives and entitled to certain time off, or, you know, need to take care of things. So I think it's a balancing act, and being aware and having the knowledge about what leaves are required and what's, you know, available, and what employers have to do. So again, similar to the standards and the protocols and the compliance with regard to safety, you have to look at federal, state, and even some local laws to know what laws are in effect for your particular environment. There's nothing special. There's nothing for healthcare in particular with regard to leave, but you really do need to consider all the laws at play. So from the federal level, the biggest law to keep in mind is this Family First Coronavirus Act, FFCRA. Now, the mandated part of that law expired in December of 2020. What happened for 2021, it was basically put out on a volunteer basis, and employers could opt to continue to provide that leave if they chose to do so. The way that law works is if somebody takes that leave, which is, it's up to 80 hours or 2 weeks for various corona-related events. If someone has coronavirus, or they're taking care of a person that has coronavirus, those are the two major events. There was a lot of options when schools were, you know, completely remote that people can use that time. The idea for employers was if somebody was taking that, they would be able to get a tax credit for that leave. So that's why some employers continued to offer it. They're not required to do so, though, in 2021. But if they are doing it, they need to continue to have that in their policies and make it clear to employees that it's being provided. Another major new law that came out was basically on the state level. So there's three types of leaves available from New York State. There's the New York State paid sick leave, which actually the law went into effect in September of 2020. And basically employers, depending on the size of their workplace, are supposed to provide sick time to employees. And the employees have to accrue that time. They were supposed to be accruing it since last September. There's also New York State COVID leave, which went into effect in January of 2021. And that really relates to employees that are subject to an order of quarantine or isolation and getting paid for that time. So that's a separate leave, and that's, you know, required for employers to pay. And then on top of that, there was the New York State COVID-19 vaccine leave. So for employees that, you know, sought to get vaccinated, they have up to 4 hours of paid leave for each vaccine shot. And that law went into effect March of 2021. And then if an employer is located in New York City, there's also the New York City Earned Sick and Safe Time Act, which they have to comply with as well, which provides another level of paid time off for events that would be qualify under that act. So it's a lot of leaves, and they're all different. And some are overlapping, some are not. So it's really important to make sure that they have their leave policies correct and they understand and they offer the required amount of leave under each law, and that it's being tracked properly. Otherwise, they could be out of compliance. And there's a lot of penalties for failure to comply with each of these laws.
It really is a lot of moving parts. It's a lot for the average. I mean,
oh, I forgot one. I'm sorry. Yes, I thought I finished, but I didn't. And then there's the New York paid family leave law, which is, it's been in effect for a long time. But basically what that does is it provides employees with, it's a paid benefit through an insurance policy. So the employer isn't directly paying the time, but they can apply for the benefit to care for a family member who is, you know, potentially suffering from an illness or sick, and that could include, you know, caring for a child or a baby. But it doesn't apply for an employee to take care of themselves. It's only for to take care of someone other than themselves, a family member. And certain employers, if they're over 50, if they have over 50 employees, are required to also comply with Family Medical Leave Act, which is a federal law that provides job protected leave for an employee to care, you know, that has a serious medical condition themselves or is caring for a family member that has one.
So how does an employer keep all of this straight and remain in compliance? What's your best advice for somebody that's trying to do their best to be in compliance with all of these different mandates?
Well, it's vitally important that employers have a handbook and really policies on this, and that those policies are reviewed continually. They don't stagnate. And it definitely helps to have labor and employment counsel to help draft and, you know, and update the policies. We've had to do it just so many times in the last year because it's changed so much. but it's really, really important. As much as like someone does it, it's really important that someone at the employer site is actually understands and is aware of how these policies work, and that you're, you know, it's not just you have it, you really need to have someone on the ground completely looking at this, because it's very confusing. I mean, and it's so hard to keep track of. But it's, you have to have the policies, and you have to, the very critical part is making sure you're tracking that you're doing all these policies.
And what is the downside risk if for some reason you have a policy that's not in compliance with one of these mandates or laws?
There's a lot, each law has its own set of penalties and is enforced by a different agency. And you, so you could be subject to those penalties, but then you're open to risk of litigation under all of these laws. So it's, and some are enforced by the Department of Labor, some are enforced by, you know, like the Family Medical Leave Act is a federal law. It has its own right of action. So it's just, it leaves you open to a lot of potential risk. So something that could have been easily fixed with, you know, providing somebody with literally one day off, could all of a sudden be thousands of dollars in fines and potentially defending yourself in a legal situation.
Well, on that note, we're going to take a brief break and lots to digest. So let everyone take a moment to think about that, and we'll be back. Don't go anywhere. We'll be right back with more with Seema Ali. Welcome back to Healthcare Confidential. We're here with labor and employment attorney Seema Ali, and we're talking about the many, many ways that COVID-19 has affected employers across the board, but particularly healthcare employers. There have been an increase in COVID-19 whistleblower cases recently. Can you talk a little bit about how that is playing out?
Yeah. So generally speaking, under both federal and state laws, employers are prohibited from retaliating against employees who report practices that threaten the public health and safety, and or file complaints about unsafe working conditions. And as I mentioned earlier, especially in the healthcare type of setting, because of the nature of work, the bar for having a safe workplace is just very high. And as we've heard about, there's been quite a bit of exposure that healthcare workers have had to COVID in general. And as a result of that, and because, you know, there's been, the bar is so high, and I think there was so much at stake, especially during the earlier stages of the pandemic or when we had these waves, that there's been quite a bit of increase in these whistleblower cases, because there, you know, employees have come forward and complained there isn't enough PPE equipment, and they're not feeling safe, and they're feeling like they got exposed. And if they do come forward, they were being retaliated against. And so there, I think the response to that has been, there's been an increase in cases, but that is why some of these laws have been passed to provide a greater level of safety for employees in the workplace, and putting the onus on employers to really provide that and provide different, you know, and have more incentives for employers to comply.
Okay, so more protection for whistleblowers, essentially, and more of a imperative for employers to be compliance and not give employees a reason to be looking to make those kinds of allegations or complaints.
Correct.
Tell me a little bit about what has happened in terms of opinions on training time, overtime, wage and hour laws.
Yeah, so that's another area where, again, many people have, you know, are working longer hours, working in more extreme circumstances and doing, you know, job duties that they may or may not have really done before. So there is this concept called donning and doffing. So like time it takes to put on clothes. Now, all of a sudden, you know, you have a greater requirement to put on, you know, extra layers of clothes, to put on your PPE equipment. And that time, you know, should be part of your working time. So that's, those are types of things. The time it takes to do screening and all of that are now really, that's part of your working time. So they have to account for that being, you know, part of their day, and not necessarily when they start, but maybe, you know, when they arrive, and include that, incorporate that, because those would be things that, you know, that employers might not be paying for. Another thing is that partly is also accounting for accurately if people are working remotely and doing telehealth visits or telemedicine or anything like that. How is that time being tracked, and is it being tracked and recorded properly, and are people being paid for that time?
And I would imagine there's more training involved, right? For healthcare workers, they've had to really come up to speed on what's going on with this pandemic, and there's an ongoing need for employers to disseminate information about the virus itself. Is that part of it as well?
Yeah. So time spent, that would be considered work time. And actually in the HERO Act, part of the requirement by November is that all employers, which includes healthcare employers, have to really have like almost like a workplace safety committee in the workplace. And that education and training related to safety is, that would be something they're required to do. But that time spent training is definitely considered work time. And employer, you know, if employees are going to be provided the training or expected to attend training, they have to be paid for that time.
Got it. Lastly, how has the approach to non-compete agreements in healthcare changed?
So I would say unique to healthcare, they tend to have a lot more non-compete agreements. And since the onset of COVID, many courts just have been more reluctant to find non-compete agreements reasonable and therefore enforceable. So even though an agreement may exist, basically courts are saying no, that, you know, the restrictions against the competition are just not fair, and they don't really have the force and effect. So I think it's better to really look at why, or the basis, and possibly rolling back or making any restrictions very specific, because it's going to be harder and harder to really enforce them.
Well, I feel like we have just crammed, you know, probably several semesters worth of law school and an awful lot of knowledge into 30-minute conversation here. So I want to thank you so much for taking the time to talk with us, Seema Ali. If listeners have questions, and I'd be shocked if they didn't, how can they learn more?
So the best way, honestly, we have a lot of information on our website, which is Ali Law Group, ALILawGroup.com. And even all our contact information is on there, but we have a wealth of resources and, you know, a lot of the services that we offer are on there. And we have a great blog section that has a lot of information about the latest cases and, you know, recent developments that are really helpful.
And I want to remind those listeners that new Healthcare Confidential episodes are available every Monday morning wherever you access podcasts. Our theme song is an original composition written and performed by the multi-talented Patrick Piparsik. If you enjoyed the show, please subscribe and leave us your feedback, and help us continue the conversation on the Healthcare Confidential Facebook page. Be well, everyone.